Welcome to Energy Stew. This is Peter Roth, your host. And I'd like to ask you, how do you feel about an opportunity to use a psychedelic medicine? What does that mean to you, psychedelic? What is programmed into you about it? And we've had a show about this recently, and hopefully you feel better about it since then. And we're going to look at psychedelic medicine and kind of compare it, put it into context with psychiatric medicine, and see what we can, what our author has to say about it. And our author again is back again, the author of the book Psychedelic Medicine, The Healing Powers of LSD, MDMA, Psilocybin, and Ayahuasca, Dr. Richard Lewis Miller. Richard, welcome to Energy Stew.
Thank you, Peter. Very glad to be here, all the way from California to your show in New York.
That's great. And, you know, you don't even have to be on a psychedelic to travel that fast. So you've been, as we know from the last show, you know, you've really been knowing about psychedelics a good part of your life, and they and you and in the context of being a psychotherapist, they've been very important to your understanding of how to help people. Unfortunately, for many years they've been against the law, and it's hard to include them, right?
Well, it's been over a half a century that some of them have been made illegal, for sure. And it's you could say, as you did, that it's very difficult to get them. And that's true, because you're getting what has been determined to be an illegal substance with very severe penalties, not only for the person who might take the medicine or have it in their possession, but when these medicines are used properly as medicines, then they're always taken in the company of a professional guide, most likely a licensed psychologist or psychiatrist. And that person is in jeopardy when they do that of losing their license and possibly even going to jail.
For now.
Now.
Yeah, we want to change that.
Well, a lot of us would very much like to change that, Peter, because to begin with, we think that university research at the highest level should be allowed on all substances. We don't believe, many of us, certainly myself included, I don't believe that any substance should be made illegal for scientific research purposes. Everything needs to be studied on the planet, not everything minus certain things.
That's true about a lot of different things in our society.
Correct.
Repressed due to competition, due to corruption and greed.
And theology.
And morally. Corruption and greed, depending on whose hands.
Okay, fair enough. So it's complicated when you want to take a medicine that could be life-changing in a positive way, and it's illegal. And I think a great example is the famous case of the little child in New Jersey who was suffering from, what, I think 300 convulsions a week, and went to, the parents took the baby to Colorado, where it was given CBD, cannabidiol, and the convulsions dropped to one a week. It was so dramatic that the CNN physician, Sanjay Gupta, heard about it and weighed and did research. And then he made a full movie about it for television, showing the world that there was a truly remarkable healing that went on from giving this baby cannabidiol.
Right.
That's a really great example. I could give you so many others.
Right, but we're really talking about two different things here. One is the medicinal qualities for health purposes, for physical health purposes. And a lot of what you're interested in is the psychological health that these offer. And so we know that medical marijuana is becoming quite popular around the country, but nobody seems to be talking about the psychedelics that your book is about. And those, you know, are further off. We know that, for instance, MDMA, as you talk about in the book, is hopefully going to be approved for research in 2021, something like that, or 2020. And but that's the only one that seems to be, you know, on the threshold. And yet your book talks so much about the opportunities given by LSD, psilocybin, and ayahuasca that we're missing out on.
Yes, you have to think about this, Peter, in terms of an overall long-term plan. You see, some of us have been at this for 30, 40, and 50 years. And what we determined was that the way to get a foot in the door was through marijuana, because marijuana had the best chance of getting legalized for medicinal purposes because of a whole lot of factors, not the least of which was the tens of millions of people who were smoking marijuana. And so that was the foot in the door, and that's happening in state after state around the United States, which is the legalization of medical marijuana. Some states have already followed that, such as California, with recreational marijuana being legalized. This is another big step. Now you're talking about MDMA, which not only we're looking to get legalized for research purposes additionally, as you just stated, but also that MDMA will be legalized as a medicine as of 20 or 21. And so that will be the next step. Then we're going to have a real uphill battle, because we're talking about major psychedelics, medicines that alter the mind in much more significant ways than marijuana and MDMA, although marijuana and MDMA certainly do alter consciousness, there's no question, and we all know that. But the other three that you just mentioned that are in my book, Psychedelic Medicine, LSD, psilocybin, and ayahuasca, those are the home run heavy hitters. And we're in for a major, major slog to get towards getting those legalized. And at the same time, Peter, those are the ones that have the potential to be the most healing. And those are the ones which have the potential to most facilitate creativity. And the creativity I'm talking about here is what I believe I mentioned on our first interview together, which is the creativity for each of us to go within ourselves using the focus of the mind to make internal healing changes. And that's going to be the biggie, in my opinion.
Right. And yet, the block here is fear. And it's the fear of an altered state of consciousness. And even with medical marijuana, people are saying, yeah, that's great that it works, but hopefully you don't get high doing it. And, you know, they're afraid of any altering of the mind. And, you know, the reputation publicly and propaganda-wise of psychedelics is that the altered state of consciousness is bad.
And Correct. And some of it has to do with the propaganda program that has been perpetrated by the United States government, leading the way and pushed by the pharmaceutical companies. Because, for example, Peter, even the word you just used, which is so in the common parlance in this country, high, getting high. Nobody gets high from marijuana. Nobody, no, you don't leave your feet. You're on the ground. If you're sitting in a chair, you don't get up out of the chair, and you don't have a sense of being elevated into the cosmos or into the clouds or even 20 feet above your house. But there's so many, 90% of the people probably who use marijuana in this country have probably used the word getting high from some time. That was a mistake, and it's a mistake for all of us to continue that. What do you get from marijuana? You get a different consciousness. Your consciousness is changed or altered temporarily. That's actually what happens. Okay. You don't get high anymore than you do get shit face from alcohol. Right. You don't.
Right. It's not right. Like LSD.
People used to get shit face from alcohol. And that was in the days before when we had horses before cars, and there was horse manure in the streets, and when people drank and fell down, they often fell on their face in horse manure. And then when they stood up again and walked down the street, people would say, "Oh yeah, look at that guy, he's shit-faced." That's how that came about. But you never saw anybody walking down the street 3 feet off the ground, so you could say, "Oh, he's high, he must be on marijuana."
Right, but it's different with the other psychedelics. And that's an opportunity that most people don't understand because of the propaganda against it. So let's talk about mind alteration and how that's supposed to be so bad. And let's compare that to psychiatric drugs and how they alter the mind.
Many substances alter the mind. The psychiatric medications alter the mind. Whether it's a Valium that alters the mind and depresses it and relaxes it, or it's a selective serotonin reuptake inhibitor, SSRI, such as Zoloft and Paxil and Prozac and Effexor, etc., they alter the mind. How do they alter the mind? They alter the mind in the same way that the psychedelics do, namely by having an effect on the neurotransmitters, the little chemicals in the brain that transmit information. How each of these affects different neurotransmitters, whether it's serotonin or dopamine, how each of these different substances affects those neurotransmitters is what we then subjectively feel. There's great concern about the psychiatric medicines because they tend to be control devices.
Suppressing us.
They are looking to suppress, because many people see modern psychiatry, the medicine of modern psychiatry, as being modern day straitjackets. We went from chaining people who had severe problems up against walls, literally with chains, to wrapping them in sailcloth and hosing them down with ice-cold water, to sometimes putting pieces of soap in stockings and hitting them with the soap. And then eventually we got to giving them, and there are many other methods that we tried, putting people in chairs, spinning them around, and then eventually we tried giving them certain pills that will quiet them down.
Well, there's also surgery.
And then, of course, there is also surgery, lobotomy, which cuts away a piece of the brain. Thank you for that. That was another method that was tried, all in the name of either quieting people down or, if they're depressed, bringing them up out of the depression. The problem is that none of these medicines do what they're supposed to do for enough people. They do it for some people. There's no doubt about it. There is a percentage of the population that get benefit from some of these psychiatric medicines. They don't do it for enough. One, two, the side effects are often monumental. And we get people, I think, Peter, I can sum it up beautifully with a story that was written up in the San Francisco Chronicle in the early days of Prozac. The journalist said, I took the stuff. I felt pretty good. My depression seemed to lift. And I was thinking that I was improved. But then I went to my mother's funeral and I noticed that I didn't have any emotion. And as I noticed that, I started to follow myself after that. And I noticed that all of my emotions were dulled. So in effect, what happened was I was dulled down as a person in order to feel a little better with regard to my depression.
Right. So we were creating a zombie population.
That's what the journalist said. He said, you know, I threw the stuff away and I decided I'd rather deal with depression and have real feelings when my mother dies or somebody in the family than walk around like an automaton. So right. That's one of the great difficulties with the psychiatrics. The psychedelics, on the other hand, expand the consciousness. They bring people into new arenas of consciousness. But more importantly, or you know, let's say equally of equal importance, is they lend themselves, they facilitate the looking at oneself in order to actually get to what it is that's creating the problem that we'd like to heal. The psychiatric medicines cover it up or suppress it or dismiss it.
But there's a misunderstanding. There's a misunderstanding about what opening up means, because a lot of people are afraid of their minds. They're afraid of opening up more suffering. If you open the floodgate of awareness, oh my God, it's going to be terrible.
And that, what you just said, is accurate. It's unfortunate. And it's an aspect of our educational system.
Right.
Because what we need to be taught, Peter, is that looking at the toughest stuff, the darkest stuff, the nastiest stuff, that's the best thing to do. That's where the meat is. That's where the healing is. Because the more I can go inside and look at my dark side and look at my demons and look at my fear, the more I can master them, the more I can eliminate them, I can heal them. And then I don't walk around through the world with a Damocles sword around my neck about, suppose one of these things jumps out at me right in the middle of a talk or right in the middle when I'm with my lady friend or right in the middle of work. And now I've got to deal with these terrible thoughts or this dark stuff or this ugly stuff. That's the kind of stuff that we want to address when we take a medicine, of course, with the help of another person. And we want to address and heal. We don't want to be taking these drugs and these medicines for the rest of our life, as the psychiatric profession would have us do. We want to take them for a short period of time, heal, get the job done, and move on with life.
But let's put it into a context, a positive context, because that can scare people. So, oh yeah, take this stuff, and all of a sudden I see monsters. You know, my feeling is that a lot of these you take and it opens you up to a greater awareness of your universality, of your soul light, of the greatness of ourselves in the universe.
Yes.
Then from that, it's much easier to approach our fears and our traumas.
Yes, very much so. But important to note here, when you said, you know, people don't want to look at this dark stuff, you know, you don't want to go up in an airplane if you don't know how to fly without a teacher. So nobody is suggesting taking these materials for medicinal purposes all by yourself. But when you go with an expert, the expert is there to help you through these dark periods. And to help you transform, excuse me, I had to bend down and get my wire here for my computer before it goes out. The guide is there to help you and to turn dark into light. And so from that perspective, if you have a guide that you trust, there's nothing to fear no matter how dark the stuff. In fact, you might say just the opposite. And you, I don't know, maybe you're telling me, Peter, that's a hard sell for people because people are afraid to face their dark stuff. But, you know, that's why having a trusted ally is so important.
But I don't think it always has to be flushing out the dark stuff either. I think a lot of it, for instance, my experiences with all of these when I was young was all positive. And I just felt greatly enhanced spiritually and understood life in deeper ways, because then you understood, you know, the superficial structures that we live in the world versus our universal awareness.
I agree with you. You don't have to, and I'm glad you said that. We don't have to take these psychedelics and always be looking for dark stuff. That's my perspective, because I'm a therapist and I'm always looking to help people with their dark stuff. But there's another whole arena with psychedelic medicine, which is you can take it not because you have dark stuff or even want to deal with that. You can take it because you want to expand your consciousness and have a wider view of the world. Exactly. You can take it because you want to get closer to other human beings, and these medicines facilitate connectivity with others. And you could take it to deal with a physical problem in your life, such as if you're an architect, or you're a designer, or you're a plumber, or an electrician, and you've run into some kind of physical issue, a problem, and you're dealing with it, and the psychedelic medicine can offer you a new perspective on how to deal with it. That's why, of course, Steve Jobs and Watson and Crick of the DNA molecule and Carl Sagan, the astrophysicist, while these people, they use it for creativity, right? Oh. So there are various ways to use this, you know, for creativity, for healing, for connection with others. MDMA is an amazing heart connector. And so is ketamine, by the way. We haven't talked about ketamine.
No, I don't know that one. That's interesting.
Ketamine is a fascinating medicine, and what's partly of why you need to know about it, Peter, and your listeners should know about it, is because it's one of the few psychedelics that's totally legal.
Wow.
Yes, it's totally legal. And
where do we go?
Psychiatrist, I think almost any physician, can write a prescription for it. And it's quite an interesting substance, ketamine.
Now, and does that need to be taken with a professional who prescribes it?
In the early use of ketamine, you definitely want to take it with a professional guide, no question. Otherwise, you're literally going up in an airplane and you don't know how to fly and you don't have a pilot with you. You don't want to do that. After one gets used to it, people are given prescriptions to take home and to do it on their own. And I'm saying that based on what's happening here in California. You've heard of the Kaiser Permanente Medical Group. It's a hospital chain in California. The psychiatric departments of Kaiser Permanente are using ketamine treatment for depression.
Can you spell it for our audience?
K-E-T-A-M-I-N-E.
Great.
And the book on ketamine, written by a good friend and colleague, Dr. Phil Wolfson. And if your listeners just want to hear the interview that I did with Phil Wolfson on my radio program, Mind, Body, Health, and Politics, they can go to my archive and listen to an interview with one of the foremost researchers on ketamine in the country, Dr. Phil Wolfson.
So your website is mindbodyhealthandpolitics.com?
The website is actually, no spaces, no dots, mindbodyhealthpolitics.org. But if you just remember to go to Google and type in mindbodyhealthpolitics or Dr. Richard Lewis Miller, you'll find it. Very easy.
Good. I'm glad we got that in here.
Yeah.
So, I think it's important.
By the way, while we're on that topic, Peter, let me just add that there are a lot of great interviews on the archive with scientists doing research into psychedelic medicine.
And a lot of that is in your book, Psychedelic Medicine.
That's right.
Right. So yes. Right. So this, you know, this is such an opportunity. And, you know, I'm glad there's a way for people to get started, at least,
yes,
with ketamine and medical marijuana and, you know, whatever, but, even recreational marijuana. But it's important to understand the story around it. And that's why I like the fact that you get involved with politics, because, you know, we're living in such, well, not only now, the whole history of psychedelic medicine is based on just a misunderstanding of human potential and the need to, you know, create lobotomies or do eugenics and, you know, kill off the weak, who they think are the weak personalities, so that, you know, nobody is abnormal. And what we want to do is even maybe perhaps learn how to be more abnormal.
Well, given what normality has become, given the sad state of normality, being abnormal can be a life-saving way of being.
Yeah.
Because normal in our country, Peter, is in a very sad state of existence. I mean, one example alone, 71.2% of the United States right now are overweight or obese. 71.2%, that's more than two out of every three people. And they are telling us with their public suffering, and I say public because you walk down the street overweight, everybody sees it. You can't hide it. You can hide a lot of problems, but you can't hide overweight. They're telling us with their being walking down the street that they are in trouble. And therefore, with 71% of the country being in that condition, the entire country is in trouble. And it's extremely serious. And right. It's something
well,
that
maybe we can do a future show on the politics around the suppression, repression of well-being, and how, you know, the food companies and the government, you know, media really don't teach us enough to live more appropriately.
I would say just the opposite. They not only don't teach us enough to live appropriately, they're leading us to perdition, because their whole mission is accumulation of material wealth to the detriment of all those below them. So we have a hierarchy of wealth, and most of the people are at the bottom and they're suffering. And right. That's part of why 71.2% of the population are obese and overweight, is because they're suffering.
So
we're
running out of time, and this is okay. All fodder for more. So,
okay.
So Richard Miller, and the author of Psychedelic Medicine, thank you so much for being a guest on Energy Stew. It's always wonderful talking with you.
Thank you, Peter. It's lovely being with you also, and I love the warm expression on your face as you interview me.
Oh, thank you. That's nice. And this is Peter Roth, your warm, expressive host of Energy Stew. I can be reached at peter@heartriver.org, heartriver.org, or 212-222-7748. I'd love to hear from you, and thank you so much for listening.